Welcome to Florida.
That is the voice of New York Times bestselling author and award-winning environmental reporter Craig Pittman. My name is Chad Scott. This is Welcome to Florida. And Craig, it's commonly thought that hurricane season is the most dangerous time to be in Florida and for Floridians. I disagree. I would call legislature season the most dangerous time in Florida. You had a Florida Phoenix column a couple of weeks ago that I am by no means some sort of pie-eyed optimist when it comes to development in Florida, but even this one surprised me. There are attempts making their way through the legislature to reduce the permitting period for new development, if I've got that right. Explain you found out.
Well, basically, these bills, there's a group of them, but there was one that had actually already passed a committee, and that's the main one I wrote about. It, to tell cities and counties, okay, you're taking too long to send your building inspectors out to check new condos. And so therefore, you need to cut way back on that. It needs to be much, much shorter time. And gee, you know, it's almost like the whole Surfside condo collapse never happened because it's this. That's how crazy this is.
They are trying to essentially ram through, push through. I'm sure this bill made no sort of provision to hire more inspectors.
No,
they just want faster rubber stamping of development projects.
And
what
and
those the foundation the, looks like, what the roofing look like, just get them through, bro.
Yeah. And there was a provision where if the builder hires their own inspector to do the inspection, they have even less time to
approve. That idea.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, so, that is the old hen watching or fox watching the chicken coop sort of.
Yeah.
Just amazing the extent to which our legislature will bend over backwards to aid development, aid developers at the expense of safety, at the expense of citizens, at the expense of climate change, the environment, the natural world. And this is as stark an example of that as I can remember. An effort to essentially make the job of inspectors more difficult, pressuring them to move faster and look less carefully.
Yeah, exactly.
FloridaPhoenix.com. Holy smokes. Florida Phoenix, it does not, of course, only have Craig's work there. There's all kinds of reporting across the state, politics, environment, general news. It's a fantastic resource.
Almost by Diane Roberts. Yeah.
That I go to almost every single day. All right. We're going to bring up a topic today that I was first made aware of by your great book, Oh Florida, and you mention in there the Johns Committee. 10,000 feet. What are we talking about here?
The Johns Committee. This is during the McCarthy era in Washington. The Johns Committee was a similar committee that was set up in Tallahassee. I think it was probably the most evil thing the Florida legislature ever did. And wrecked a lot of lives. It ruined a lot of people. And only ended because they were so confident in their abilities that they led themselves open to widespread national ridicule. Well, it's a great story. It's a great Florida story.
There are remarkable echoes to the headlines today. This is evidence that the culture wars in Florida go back a full 70 years, if not further. We're talking to Stacy Brockman, and she is the author of a book, Communists and Perverts Under the Palms. Whoever came up with that title, we've had a lot of great authors. We had Randy Wayne White on recently, and we've got Dave Barry coming up.
Yeah.
They take a back seat to this title, however good a writer they are. Nothing tops Communists and Perverts Under the Palms. That is that is all-star. The full title, Communists and Perverts Under the Palms, the Johns Committee in Florida in 1956 through 1965. So that's the era we're talking about here, mid-century. This is pre-civil rights. And in Florida, this Johns Committee was up to some real treachery, and Stacy's going to tell us all about it.
Stacy, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it. This is such an important event in Florida history, and I think most of the people who live in Florida now have no idea that this even happened. I've been trying to think of a good place to start. Let me start by asking you, who was Charlie Johns?
Well, first of all, Craig, thank you for having me. I do think it's an important topic. And I actually had hoped over the past couple of years with the whole Ron DeSantis thing that it would have actually become better known. Hopefully it will, and not just to sell books. So Charlie Johns was a small town Florida senator from Stark, in Alachua County, and he served for about 30 years in the Florida Senate. He also served for a short time, about a year and a half, 1953, as the interim governor. And he was sort of the de facto leader of a small group of conservative legislators who came from Florida, legislators who came mostly from northern rural counties, called the Pork Chop Gang or the Pork Choppers. And they had a disproportionate control of the Florida legislature during the post-World War II years. So he became the figurehead. He wasn't the first the first director of the committee when it began in 56, but it quickly became known as the Johns Committee after him because he was by far the most ardent proponent of this type of investigating committee. So,
and what was the real name? It wasn't officially the Johns Committee. It had an official name.
Yeah, it was the Florida Legislative Investigation Committee.
And is it fair to compare it to the House Un-American Activities Committee that, you know, happened in Congress, the Red Scare?
Yes. In fact, I see it, many people see it as a product of that. That's that sort of Cold War mentality of rooting out subversives. And Florida was just one of many, almost every southern state after the Brown decision in 1954 created committees like that. And their number one target was the NAACP, which was at the forefront of legal cases that, in fact, had culminated in the Brown decision. And then post-Brown, the NAACP was the most active organization in trying to get Black children into previously all white schools.
So force essentially the states to honor Brown. When you say Brown, that's Brown versus Board of Education. That's the integration of schools. And while the Supreme Court ruled on that, a lot of states said over my dead body.
Correct.
So before we focus in, let me widen out for people. We have mentioned the Pork Chop Gang on this podcast a couple of times. Give us a thumbnail sketch. Who are these people? What matters to them? You know, when was their, you know, peak era of power in Florida? Because they were incredibly influential for a long time.
I would say after World War II, between the years of after World War II and the mid-1960s, really up until the Florida legislature was reapportioned more fairly to give them less power within the legislature, I would say their number one fear was losing power, and specifically losing power to cities and urban areas that were booming. I would say their other main interest was white supremacy and racial segregation and maintaining, you know, the Southern way of life.
Yeah. And it's important to remember at this time, these would be Democrats, right? When we're talking about this period, even though white nationalism, white supremacy, homophobia is associated with Republicans in the right wing today, in this mid-century period, this was part and parcel with the Southern Democratic Party.
That's correct. And they're the same ones who became Republicans after 1964 with the passage of the Civil Rights Act. They specifically left the party because Lyndon Johnson supported integration, equal rights.
All right.
Yeah. The Johns Committee, it went after the NAACP, but it didn't work out for them, did it?
It did not. So they started out their reign 1956, 57 through 58 by holding a series of public hearings in which they interrogated members of the NAACP, leaders in the NAACP, lawyers for the NAACP, and they started out with questions about illegal activities. It was not specifically anti-communist, but within a year, especially when they were in Miami, they've actually found an overlap between people who happened to be members of the Communist Party, but also in the NAACP. So there was, you know, a little grain of truth. In these series of public hearings, they ended up asking for membership lists, membership roles, other documents, which was happening all around the South. And in fact, Thurgood Marshall and others had requested that branches send them this material so that it could not be taken. In any case, it's a long story, but the gist of it is that in Tallahassee and Miami, NAACP members refused to answer questions about what other groups they belong to. They refused to hand over membership roles and other documents. They were held in contempt, and it escalated into a series of court cases that were not settled until 1963 in favor of the NAACP being able to maintain their own lists without government intrusion.
Because they're a private organization, obviously. Of course they can.
Yes. Right. So In the interim, there was an injunction against any further questioning or investigating of the NAACP. And so around 1958-59, they needed a new target. And because the committee was an interim committee, it had to be re-established every 2 years. So they, in 1959, they made the case that there's a new menace threatening Florida, and especially Florida's children, and that is homosexual professors and teachers.
Based on what?
Well, based on, I argue in my book, based on the fact that that was a pretty mainstream and widely understood threat, which is gay people in general. Homosexuals were not allowed in the military. They were rooted out of the State Department and the civil service. It was part and parcel of the Red Scare in the United States. Now in Florida, there is no, from what I have learned, there's no smoking gun that says, here's why we did it. Here's why we went after gay people, like how they made that decision.
Yeah. But it's just an easy target, a populist, something the masses can get behind. Yes, they're coming for our children. Keep God in school. I mean, all of this claptrap that we hear today.
Well, and this basic frequently stated, you hear it today of, oh my God, they can't breed more homosexuals, so they have to groom them and recruit them. And it's like, it's so stupid, but that was the thinking then.
Mm-hmm. It was, and I'm not allowed to use claptrap or stupid. I wasn't allowed to use that, but I appreciate your...
He speaks the vernacular.
what I learned from most of the research I did in the 1990s, and most of it was at the Florida archives. I also went to UF and some other universities to look through their records. But what I could gather was that there had been complaints from the University of Florida that there were homosexuals on the faculty, and that in fact Charlie Johns's son allegedly told him about it, and he sent the chief investigator of the committee, R.J. Strickland, to the University of Florida, and it proved remarkably easy to find them. They worked with the University of Florida Police Department. They set up sting operations. They got informants, and they started questioning students, faculty in motel rooms, basements, very random, secretive places, where they were threatened with criminal charges if they did not cooperate. And so they found it. They found dozens and dozens of names. And over the course of a couple of years, they ended up firing at least 14 faculty and untold numbers. I don't have numbers of how many students left or were kicked out.
Yeah, and that's, but, you know, and professors, teachers, assistants who would quit rather than be publicly outed. Again, this is 1960, you know, the early 1960s. There is no popular gay rights movement. This is the Stonewall riots. This is, you know, there is no LGBTQ. That's not even a thing. LGBTQ plus, that acronym does not exist. There are no rainbow flags. Homosexuals at that time exist deep undercover across America and exclusively on the margins. Again, so, you know, these quote unquote investigators had to go looking for this. Again, this is not like an out in the open sort of come to our LGBTQ meeting across from, you know, the pizza place in Gainesville. You know, they literally had to dig for these people and find informants and have, you know, people under the threat of coercion roll over on friends, colleagues.
Yes. You mentioned the stings that they actually set up in the men's room at the courthouse.
Yeah, so the Alachua County Courthouse had been used since at the earliest I saw, it was people saying that they had been going there since the 1930s for sexual encounters in the bathroom. And it was, I call it an open secret. People knew about it, and it was just at this time, you know, well, we know where they are, let's go get them. And that's what really started the ball rolling, because it was, you could trace, and I think this is why they then got into investigating public school teachers, because they found out that many of them had gone to the University of Florida specifically, but also Florida State, to train as teachers. And so you take the gay student, becomes a teacher, and then now all of a sudden you have to scour the entire state, which they did. For public school teachers.
Oof. Wow. But the epicenter really was the University of Florida, because, you know, it's the same way today. You know, college campuses are generally more progressive, open, educated, welcoming to alternative lifestyles, including the homosexuality. So, you know, they went fishing where the fish were.
Yeah, well, and actually what's funny about UF is that at the time, the students, because this was being done so secretively, a lot of rumors were going around on campus, and a lot of students protested the John's Committee, whether it's in the student newspaper or just publicly on campus, saying, like, they're not really going after gays. They're looking for professors who support racial integration. Like, it was actually more to the students. They really thought, like, it's because we're liberal, it's because some of our faculty openly support integration, which was also very uncommon. I don't think it was until a little bit later that they realized, oh gosh, they really are hunting homosexuals.
University of South Florida was also a target, was it not?
Yeah. So that happened in 1961 is when it all started, because by this time, the John's Committee was known enough in the state that, like, if you had a complaint, they got a lot of complaints from citizens. There were letters saying, I think there's a gay teacher here, can you please come investigate? This professor is supporting racial integration, can you please investigate? So at USF, there was a group of parents who got together, they organized a meeting. And the mayor of Tampa, Julian Lane, attended this initial kickoff meeting, and they were complaining about, you know, there's support for integration on the faculty, there's homosexuals on the faculty, the professors are using bad words and assigning obscene literature as legitimate reading material, and they're soft on communism, they believe in evolution, they think the Bible is, you know, mythology. So everything that we hear now about, you know,
it has a spine tingling, you know, relevance.
Parallels,
today.
Yeah.
Moms for Liberty and book bans. Oh, and, you know, one parent can call, you know, some mysterious office and complain about one line in one book, and it's, you know, gone. I mean, it's remarkable. You know, it may be 2024, but it's 1960 all over again in a lot of respects.
It does feel that way. So the committee went into Tampa, and they thought they were going to do the same thing they had done before at UF and other places, where they would just have secret interrogations in motel rooms. And somehow word got out that this was happening. The president of USF at the time, John Allen, said, nope, if you want to do this, we're going to do this in public. So for the first time, this kind of investigation was covered in the press. And you know, to see, no offense, but a real country cracker guy using bad grammar, representing the state of Florida, asking a professor why they assigned J.D. Salinger and calling it crap. You know, how can you assign this crap? It's like people, there was actually, unlike previous investigations, there was public alarm and vocal criticism saying this is not the place of the state legislature to actually be questioning individual reading lists in classes. And like, are you allowed to say damn and hell in a class because you're offending the women? I mean, it was crazy.
Who were like the actual investigators? Are these cops? Are these state employees? I mean, who is like doing the undercover work and the interrogation? I mean, who are the hatchet men, essentially?
There was one main guy, but his name was R.J. Strickland, and he was a former Tallahassee vice cop, but he also investigated the carpool, the bus boycott carpooling in Tallahassee in 1956, and was really good at spying. Like, that's where he really cut his teeth on, spying on people and
infiltration and that, you know, sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Dirty tricks. Yeah.
So, but, you know, there are all the interrogations that transcripts that I read in the archives would often include who else was present. And there were always Tallahassee police officers, Gainesville police officers, university police officers. But he did the heavy lifting.
So, correct me if I'm wrong, but some of the questions were really goofy. I mean, they clearly didn't know what they were talking about.
Well, it's funny. You say goofy. When I wrote this book, I really wanted to take them at their word. I really wanted to try to take them seriously and say, if this is really what people believe about Black people, this is what people believe about gay people, then let me take you seriously. Let me explore what was going, try to understand what you were thinking when you asked these questions. And I had this theory that they were kind of armchair psychologists, like sort of, I think they actually read books or at least skimmed books at the time about homosexuality, which often had this model in which you are a passive recipient of homosexual activity. And then you become, you go up the scale of like, well, once you do that, then you're going to want to do this. And then it ultimately ends with you're going to then perpetrate these acts on another innocent person so that homosexuals were made and not born. And
like it's some sort of sickness that gets progressively worse. You catch it and then it escalates.
Right. But it also involves, you know, sinister people preying on young people and converting them. And so they would ask, they asked almost the same, I called it a blueprint. The list of the questions was almost always the same. How did this start? Do you think you got this from your environment? Were you the passive person once you engaged in these acts? Did you then want to do it more? And so it doesn't explain why they asked very specific, intrusive questions about very specific body parts and acts. And that I can see would seem goofy. It certainly seemed shocking to read what they were actually asking these people, and to modern eyes was shocking. But I felt like there was a method to their madness.
And they kept a record of this because they were proud of it. They wanted there to be a record of this in case someone admitted something, then they could persecute that person.
Yeah. Yeah.
If I remember right from your book, they actually uncovered some real crimes, but paid no attention to them because it didn't fit what they were going after.
Well, yes. I mean, they interviewed people who, you know, like a Sea Scout master who had been molesting boys for years. There was a minister or a church choir director in the same situation.
No, the one I remember is that there was a judge who basically was acquiring women from the jail.
There was a Tampa judge who would demand that lesbians perform at like strip parties or perform sexual acts in order to get like a lighter sentence or to avoid being put in jail.
And they had no interest in that. That didn't fit what they were after.
From what I can tell, I don't think any legal actions happened after that. No.
Amazing. Oh. Let's talk about two things. One, who stood up to him besides the USF president? There were some newspaper folks, weren't there?
I believe the St. Pete Times had a lot of op-eds about it, and they were, so they supported, it became framed as a debate between academic freedom, like parental rights, and most other newspapers, from what I read, supported the mission, if not the techniques. So the NAACP was like champs at saying, "Oh, yeah. No, we're not playing your game." There are some examples in the archives of people who brought in lawyers to their interrogation and said, "We're not going to answer these questions." And then they did not pursue that. There were three teachers who actually sued the Department of Education for taking away their teaching certificates for being homosexual. And again, that took years to resolve. Mm-hmm. And what the eventual finding was that it was not unconstitutional to fire them. It was that the Johns Committee was not the appropriate body to do that. So the Florida Department of Education said, "We will take over this very important work. You're not going to do that. We'll do it." And because, again, it was widely understood in our culture that gay people were a threat to children and should not be teaching.
When did the Department of Education determine it was their ball and they were going to run with it? When did it switch over from the Johns Committee to the Department of Education?
It was approximately 1963, 1962. Okay. So it was while they were still operating. Mm-hmm. And then the Johns Committee, there's some records of this in the archives that they said, we understand that you need to do that, but we still have hundreds of names we can give to you whenever you need.
I think it's time to ask you about the purple pamphlet.
Oh, boy.
they were, the Johns Committee was proud of what they were doing and decided to write a report on it. Is that how it started?
Right after the USF, or maybe it was at the same time. In any event, early 1960s, the Florida Children's Commission wanted to work with the Johns Committee to put together a series of what they called educational conferences across the state, where they would present a day-long seminar, if you will, about the dangers, the related dangers of obscene literature and homosexual teachers. So they went across the state, and these conferences actually got publicized. People knew about it. The governor at the time, Ferris Bryant, praised this work of the Children's Commission and the Johns Committee. It was out there, like, they are the experts. They're going to tell us the extent of this problem. And I never saw any specific references to like what material they showed them during these conferences, or, you know, what pictures they showed them or what they talked about specifically. But at the time, in the wider culture, there was a kind of a panic happening around obscenity and indecent literature. What they did is, in a lot of this literature at the time, their mode of explaining things was to say, you need to be shocked into realizing the extent of this threat. You have no idea how bad it is. Let us show you, and you will be shocked into action. So my theory is they took that because people were acknowledging them as experts in the field, which is amazing, that they had the confidence to say, you know, we're going to take that approach and we're going to put it in a report. We're going to put it in an official report with the state seal and whatever. And we're going to show you the extent. We will show you what we have uncovered in the last 5 years, and you will be shocked into taking action. And then they put out this report, which was a combination of common stereotypes, myths about child predators, homosexuals as child predators. And then they included bizarre glossary of so-called gay lingo that was, you know, everything from, well, I'm not going to use these words in this interview, but they included like weird stuff about like sexual attraction to a statue, you know, as if that's part of the gay underground. Actually, some of the words that they included were actual, you know, underground mm-hmm. gay words. But then they threw in like necrophilia and like, yeah, well, that's not really.
No. Statues. No. Yeah.
The worst part, I think what really sunk them is they included photographs confiscated from homosexuals that showed like young boys naked, not full frontal, but like from behind. And then a young teenager like tied up with a little, tiny little G-string on. And then there was another photo taken of a sexual encounter in a bathroom where the guy has one of those old timey like blocks across his eyes. So you can't see his identity, but he's having sex in a bathroom. And this became, over the top. Everyone was appalled by it when word got out. What I found interesting was, again, a lot of like, I remember the Tallahassee Democrat and some other news outlets said, okay, we disagree with the way they did it, but the message, let's not lose sight of this important message. But most people lost sight of the message and just
because they offered offered copies for like 25 cents, didn't they?
Right. Something went awry with their distribution plan where they were really only send it to like schools and law enforcement. And somehow, because they put on the back, send 25 cents for a copy, people started ordering copies of it.
And from all over the country, not just Florida, right? And then the purple cover, I think, is sort of helped to make it this object of ridicule.
Right. So that's the front of it is just this weird swirling, like lavender swirl. And then on the, you open it up and there's two guys naked and kissing on the mouth. And it's like, okay, well, welcome to Florida.
So was it the backlash to this that essentially ended the John's Committee's reign of terror?
Yes, even Ferris Bryant was like, I really do support the work they've done. It's very important, but this was inappropriate. So they knew immediately, they're like, oh, we miscalculated and we're done.
And well, some state attorney even declared it pornography, didn't he?
Yeah, I think in Dade County.
Yeah, and said anybody distributing this will be prosecuted. It's like, it's a government report.
Yeah, exactly. Goes straight to that giant building with the columns and the governors in there and bring them out in handcuffs. Aye, aye, aye. Was there a vapor trail and inertia for all this? Did the Department of Education continue or once the John's Committee got done with its speaking specifically about the efforts to track and persecute homosexuals? Did it continue or did it stop as soon as the John's Committee disbanded?
I didn't really follow that trail mm-hmm. after 65. I know that there's been a book written called And They Were Wonderful Teachers, which is specifically about the teacher situation. And my guess is that it did continue, but probably not at the pace mm-hmm. as it during the John's Committee. And I don't know when it was like taken off the books, frankly.
As you see the things that are happening in Florida politics these days, do you say, hey, that sounds exactly like the John's Committee? I mean, how often does that happen? It just, you're like, history is repeating itself.
Yeah, I think obviously it started with Ron DeSantis. When I wrote the book, I mean, it came out in 2012 in the middle of, 8 years of Barack Obama. And like, I had this really, I guess, wildly naive optimism that, gosh, I think things are really going to get better. And I hope that things will look so different years from now. And we'll look back at this and be like, wow, that was really misguided and unfortunate. And in fact, it was, the opposite has happened, where a governor of Florida almost single-handedly decided that the biggest threats facing Florida are Black history and trans people, which by extension, LGBT, this is, mm-hmm. comes to race and sexuality.
Yeah.
Why? Why now? Why Florida? These are questions we may never know the answer to. My theory, I don't have any theories about Florida. I wish I did. John's committee, Anita Bryant, Ron DeSantis, Stop Woke. Why? I don't know.
I think it goes to the top with Trump. I mean, these are easy targets to rile up an undereducated, insecure base of white, middle and lower middle class people who are worried about losing their tenuous stature in American society. And as long as you can give them enemies, black people, intellectuals, gay people, immigrants, you know, stupid people are easy to manipulate. And Trump and DeSantis are master manipulators, and they understand their base, and they understand, you know, how to build up these pinatas of otherness for white, heteronormative, middle class, good old boy, Southern, you know, Americans to whack at.
Well, and it's a great distraction meanwhile they give away the store to their donors and campaign contributors too.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
My thought was that it was Trumpism for sure that kind of created this cultural space in which you have full permission to say, you know what, I don't believe in black equality. I don't believe in gay rights. I don't believe in trans rights. I just don't. And I think that is I think it's a backlash against the Obama years. I really think it's like been, they've just been waiting to like punish us for the fact that we had a black president for 8 years and they could not stand that.
Well, I think you see these backlashes. You're 100% right. Trump is a backlash to Obama in the same way that Reagan was a backlash to Carter and the Warren Court and increasingly liberal decisions coming out of the Supreme Court and across the nation. You know, the people in power and white supremacy and the patriarchy and capitalism are not going to just go quietly into that night. I mean, they are going to fight for what they have established here. You bring up what I tell people all the time. What Trump did most effectively, he made it okay. Not only okay, he gave license again for people to be outwardly racist, outwardly homophobic, outwardly misogynistic in a way that had not been okay since the 60s. Of course, there were racists and homophobes and misogynists, but by the 2000s, you kind of had to keep that under wraps because it was so out of the mainstream discourse. Trump made it okay. So when I look at Trump and DeSantis and kind of what you were talking about before, they are going back in the past. You know, you thought, you know, we had evolved and things had gotten better. I will say we had gotten past these issues. We had gotten past thinking you catch homosexuality, or that black people don't deserve to vote, or that women are not the intellectual equal of men, or don't deserve autonomy over their bodies. I thought, you know, we'd resolved those issues. Clearly not. These modern day, you know, right wingers, Trumpers are going back and reaching into the past and pulling these horrific moments like the Johns Committee and dragging them into the present. And that's what troubles me so deeply, because like you say, you know, how many activists, millions of people, voters thought they'd resolve these issues 30 years ago, 40 years, 50 years ago. No, here they are again, all that progress seemingly of gay rights, equality, women's rights has been lost.
Well, let me ask you one more thing before we wrap up. The shame of the Johns Committee, and the embarrassment of the purple pamphlet. The legislature sealed those records, didn't they, for a long time?
They did. Yes.
What finally opened them up?
So they were supposed to be sealed for, I think, 50 years. And in the early 1990s, there was a group of graduate students and faculty, and I can't name any names or like I don't. And they lobbied the legislature to, I guess, under the Florida Sunshine Law, to say there's no reason to keep them sealed. But so they agreed to open them, but they were all the names. I should say 99% of the names of the, especially the gay interrogations, were redacted. So in 19, that's when I became interested in the topic. I was actually working at the St. Petersburg Times as a copy clerk in the summer of 1993 when July 1st, welcome to Tallahassee, come scour all these like 20 boxes, giant cartons of documents. And there were stories in the St. Pete Times, and I was like, this is crazy. And that was kind of the attitude at the time. This is shocking. This is unbelievable. Look how crazy this is. And many of the stories and the early scholarship had that tone. And I was like, yes, it is shocking. But as a historian, you have to set aside your present day,
Attitudes.
and attitudes and say, like, let's look at it in the context of the times. And it becomes less crazy. It actually does. It makes perfect sense.
And it's funny, and there's kind of a bell curve there, right? It was shocking in the 90s. It's not shocking today.
Right. That's
It's
right.
not, it's, it is not the least bit shocking
Wow.
today.
And I would say I actually think that the reach of DeSantis's agenda is in many ways more chilling because they're taking sociology out of Florida's core curriculum. Sociology, like that's to me, that's crazy. That's like, what kind of world? What kind of world do we want to live in Florida?
Exactly.
Good question.
Stacy, thank you so much for joining us. What fascinating subject. I strongly recommend everybody go read your book, because if you forget the past, you're doomed to repeat
Yeah,
it.
Stacy Brockman, Communists and Perverts Under the Palms, the Johns Committee in Florida, 1956 through 1965. There is a link down in the show notes. Stacy, thank you so much for your insight today.
Thank you both so much.
Sure.
It's actually really, it's an honor to talk to you.
Oh, and by the way, I'm wearing a shirt with palm trees on it, just in your honor.
I love it. Thank you.
Thanks, Stacy.
All right,
Thank
take
you.
care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. One of the people who left Florida, left a promising career at the University of Florida, and left Florida was Rita Mae Brown. She was a student at UF. She was on a scholarship. She was making tremendous grades. She was even picked for a program where she got to play governor for a day. And when the Johns Committee came calling, she was targeted not only because she was gay, but also because she was in support of integration. She said, "That's it. I don't need this. I don't need this in my life." And she left the University of Florida. She dropped out and she went to New York and ended up writing one of the great books of queer literature, Ruby Fruit Jungle, which sort of tells her own story in a fictionalized way.
Wow.
So
Wow.
it's, you know.
Stacy mentioned Anita Bryant at one point, and
Yes.
if this is a subject that interests you, attacks on homosexual and queer culture, we've got an episode in the archive about Anita Bryant, who was the face of this movement in the 80s, and another true villain of Florida. This was a good one, and it's not always welcome to Florida.
Yeah, no, definitely not. Welcome to Florida, and in some cases, goodbye.